Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
Good morning. As we get started on this Saturday morning, we're going to be talking about money and doing some things today a little bit different. I just got back in town from a trip to the Dominican, and you know, it was great down there. The weather was perfect and the service was incredible, and it's just amazing how people who make very little money can be so happy about life in general, and they actually were. And you know, sometimes we get a little too tore up about things, I believe, that you know, because of different things that really aren't that big a deal. And so, you know, but I think our lifestyle has a lot to do with that. We like to do a lot of nice things, and if you do a lot of nice things and spend a lot of money, then you got to have your finances straight. And so that's what we talk about on this show, is how to get your financial affairs in order so you can have a good quality of life. And today I'm going to do a little bit different. We're going to be taking calls, and I'm going to be talking to the old guys and the old gals, kind of like me. I'm now one of those baby boomers that used to be when I first got started doing this. I was in my 20s helping people with their money. Now I'm in my late 50s, and things are different when you get at or near retirement. So today's show is going to be more about that. I did bring a little cold home with me, so bear with me. But call-in number is 615-737-9522, 615-737-9522. 737-9522. You can also send an email to roy@roymatlockjr.com and pass this on to your friends. They can actually listen live anywhere right now on the internet. They can go to my website at roymatlockjr.com and listen live, or to the iHeartRadio app. So with that being said, what we're going to do, we're going to go into how do you prepare yourself when you're at or near retirement. What do you need to be thinking about? You've got so many different things going on. You've got Social Security decisions. You've got, you know, retirement plan once you hit 59 and a half decisions. You've got long-term care. What happens if I go into a nursing home? We've got decisions on pensions. We've got decisions on life insurance. Should we have it or not? What type of IRA should we have? Annuities. Do I want to sell my home? How much should I pull out of my retirement plan? You know, what type of investments should I have? And so there's so many things that go on that most people just don't really understand how to do it. And so we're going to go through, and hopefully by the end of the show today, if you're in your at or near retirement, you're going to say, wow, that makes sense to me. But here's the thing that you got to keep in mind. Anytime you're planning this thing out, is that you got to realize that protection is the key. You know, when we're in the accumulation stage, when we're young and getting started, it's basically protect, manage, and accumulate. So you protect against an untimely death, against, you know, medical emergencies, things like that. But then what you've got to do is you got to manage your money to a point where there's money left over. And then by doing that, that allows you to save and accumulate. So one day you'll have something set aside. Protect, manage, and accumulate. So that's what I tell young people getting started. They need to be fully funding their, you know, retirement plans at work, or they need to open up a Roth IRA and fully fund that, which, by the way, you can put more money in now this year, $6,000 a year. That's $500 a month that you can put into your IRA. You can put actually an extra $1,000 if you're over age 50, so you can put $7,000 in. So if you start right there, $500 a month, you know, and you start young, I mean, you're going to have a fortune set aside if you put your money in the right places. And so, but let's talk now about when we get out to this age where we're within 10 years of retiring, or maybe we already are retiring, what are some of the things we need to think about? Well, you know, the first thing I say to people is don't lose your money. And when, you know, if you're sitting there and it was, you know, 2008 and you're retired and you're pulling money out and you had your money too aggressive or you didn't have anything to kind of protect the downside, then you got yourself in a position where now what do? You're pulling money out when the market's down. So the first thing that you need to think about is protection. Let's just don't lose our money. Let's make sure that we have our money in things that will guarantee us that we don't run out of money. And so that's the first thing. The next thing we protect against is we protect against what I consider to be the biggest threat to your retirement, and that's going into a nursing home. I think people, fear that. And, you know, of course, it's expensive, everything about it. So we'll talk about that. And then the other thing is what are you going to protect against to keep you from having inflation eat you alive to where everything costs twice as much. About every 18 years, it's going to cost twice as much. So we've got that, happening. And then the last part is the fear of running out of money. And so today we're going to cover all of those things and make sure that everybody is clear on that. So let's get started with the beginning stages. You're at or near retirement. You're within 10 years of retirement. What are some of the things you should do? Well, that's when, you need to be thinking about the protection side. So what about long-term care insurance? You know, I've always recommended people get it, by the time they're 60 and, if not sooner. And the reasoning behind that is that long-term care insurance, if you're married especially, the pricing, they give big discounts if both of you can qualify. Now, why do they do that? Well, they do it for the main reason is that they would rather you stay at home, and they would they know that you're more inclined to stay home if you have someone there helping you. And so what they do is they give big discounts if you can both get it. But here's the challenges you run into. Long-term care insurance, many people get turned down because of health concerns. In other words, it's not like life insurance. It's a little bit different in the way that you qualify. There's a lot more turndowns for health when you try to buy long-term care insurance. So what is long-term care? Well, long-term care insurance covers a number of things. It will cover home health. It will cover the expenses to get your house ready. It will cover assisted living. It will cover actual nursing homes. So if you have any of those things to where you need to go into and start using that, you buy a bucket of money. That bucket of money might be $4,000 a month for 4 years. And then you buy that bucket of money, and you decide how long you want that money to last, and then you decide if there's any inflation in it, because if we buy long-term care today, we may not use it until, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Then we don't want it to be $4,000 a day when it costs $8,000 back in the future. So you put all this together, and they come up with a premium, and generally speaking, the premiums stay level. And so you buy it today with the intention of the premium stay level. Now, recently we've seen some increases in premiums, but overall the bottom line is that you pick out the amount of money, you pick out the length of time, and you pick out how much it's going to increase based on inflation. So when we do that, we go out and we make a decision. Do we want to be fully or partially insured? Now, fully insured would be that, hey, we're going to buy a big enough policy that's going to make sure that no matter what happens, we're going to be covered. So that's one way of doing it. The next way we do it, we buy partial coverage. And that's because we've got some money set aside. We have our retirement plans. We have Social Security. We have all those different things. And what that allows us to do is to buy less coverage. And then from there, we can self-insure and save our premiums. And so with that being said, that's the beginning. Our call number is 737-9522. That's 615-737-9522. This is Roy Matlock. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the Money in Business. This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money in Business Hour. Now, back to the Money in Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back, and we're talking baby boomers and retirement planning and what you should do to prepare. And we've got a caller on the line right now regarding what we just were covering, and that's long-term care insurance. So, Jake, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I have a question about long-term care. My parents had it. It did a great job for them back up when my dad called me. Man, son, I don't know what I'm going to do. Your mom's having this back surgery. She's got to be on her back for like 6 weeks. I can only take 2 weeks off. And I said, Dad, don't you have that long-term care insurance? And he said, yeah, I do. Turns out they sent a person out, a nurse out every day, somebody to come clean the house once a week. He said it saved his life, really.
Well, yeah, so they do, the insurance companies would rather someone stay at home than go into, expensive care. And so they'll do a lot of that home health. I know some people that they came out there and they equipped their whole house, where they could get up and down the steps and things like that. So that's good. So what was your question? Yeah, tell me your question.
I'm 57, and I'm thinking about getting it because of that. And I'm trying to figure out, well, I'm pretty healthy right now. Why I'm if I buy it now, I could be paying premiums for 10 years or more before I even have to use it. Why wouldn't I just wait till getting closer to retirement and purchase?
The benefit of getting it now is that as you get older, the premiums become more expensive. But the main reason I tell people to go ahead and do it is that insurance companies, their goal is to not buy into and insure people right off the bat that might have any kind of health problems. And I know I've had family members and people that I know where they went in to try to get the long-term care and they got turned down because they waited. And so, if you're healthy right now, you might want to consider going ahead and doing it because you may not end up, being able to get it later. And then the premiums do get more expensive. If you buy them today at 57, they're going to be much less expensive than if, say, you wait to 65. Now, the other side is that you can go and be, I talked about it, be uninsured, or you can be partially insured. And the way long-term care works is you could buy something that was, $3,000 a month. So what it would do is it would pay $3,000 for a period, and that's it. Or you can buy $6,000. But if you bought the three, you would save premiums, and then you would be self-insuring the rest of it. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So even if I wait, though, you're saying the premiums are so high that I could actually save money buying now?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense the biggest challenge with waiting is, there's two. One, the premium will become very expensive. And the second thing is that, the biggest concern you have is that people get turned down. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people get declined when they try to get it. And so if you're healthy right now, it may be a good time to do it. So,
okay.
All right. Very good. 737-9522 is the call in number, 615-737-9522. I've had another person waiting here for a while. Caitlin, what's your question?
Hi. So my husband and I are in our mid-20s, and we've just had our first baby. And so we're trying to figure out the best way to prioritize our money. Do we start with debt consolidation, or do we go with life insurance or saving for retirement? We're just trying to navigate this new family.
There you go. Well, good. So you have a new baby and in your 20s, and I assume you're both working, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We both work full time.
Well, the key element, it starts out with a defense, is what I tell people. And the defense is four parts. It's the first one is getting on a budget, which allows you to, control what's going out before the month begins. So you got kind of a plan. And once you do that, that's going to get you in a position where you start saving money or at the very minimum reducing debt. And so we want to do that. We want to make sure that we develop some type of an emergency savings, even if it's just $1,000 to start, because that emergency fund will keep you from going in debt, because if you have nothing, you're going to have to get your car fixed, and so you'll end up charging. The third part of getting started is having the proper life insurance, and that life insurance should be about 10 times your income. That's a rule of thumb. Sometimes a little bit more when you're younger, but the cool thing is about that, you can buy term insurance in your 20s for very little money, because if anything happens to you, There's nothing you're going to be able to do to recover that lost income. So I would do that. And if you have consumer debt, that would be cars, credit cards, stuff like that, I would really, before I go any further than these four things, I would get that debt paid off. So do you have debt right now?
Yes, we do have some debt.
Well, if you have credit card debt and car payments and stuff like that, you know, start looking at, you know, what is it I could do? You know, a lot of times I see people, I'll tell you what I did. Before I knew what I was doing, I had bought two new cars. I was newly married, and we went out and made two mistakes at the same time. And I can't even believe back then I was paying over $600 a month 30 years ago. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know what I was thinking when they sold them to me. But anyway, but the point of it is that once I figured out that the way you get out of debt is balances, the way you get in debt is payments. And I tell people that, so we buy payments, but when we try to get out of debt, we look at balances. And the difference is it's only $300 a month. You say, oh, okay, I'll do $300 a month. But that $300 a month, if it's for 5 or 6 years, it's $20,000. So what I might look at is if you have an expensive car that has pay it down enough to where, you know, there's a little bit of equity in it, sell it and buy a cheap car. So what I ended up doing back then to get one of the key elements for me getting out of debt was I started saying to myself, okay, how much do I owe? Balances, not monthly payments. And what can I do to get out of the balances? So I sold both of those cars as soon as I had enough money to be able to get rid of them because I was upside down. Then I bought two old VW diesel Rabbits. At the time, they got 50 miles a gallon, and I was able to pay those off in less than a year, and then I didn't have a car payment anymore. That allowed me to start doing other things. And so if you have any debt, what you need to do is start looking at the balances. What's the lowest balance? Let's pay it off first. If there's ways to cut balances, then I'm going to do that. And so that, but you definitely need, you know, you got to have life insurance, term insurance. You got to have your health insurance because those things will wipe you out. So does that help?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you. A phone number 737-9522. You can also, send an email to Roy at roymatlockjr.com or go to roymatlockjr.com and you can download a lot of the information that, that I talk about because, you know, everything that we do is all about helping people get control and put themselves in a position to move forward. So far today we talked about long-term care. So what is some other things we need to talk about when we're at or near retirement? All right. So we probably should consider the long-term care in the event something happens. And then what about things like, you know, early distributions, what is called an in-service retirement distribution. If you're over 59 and a half, many of you work for companies that have retirement plans, and those retirement plans, I've seen many retirement plans where the companies are small and the expenses are really high and the options are not that good. And one of the benefits of when you're at age 59 and a half is what's called an in-service distribution. If you work currently for a company, you can roll over your retirement plan right out of there, the 401k or 403b, whatever it may be, to an individual retirement account once you're 59 and a half and continue to stay with the company and continue to contribute to the retirement plan. So what that means is that if you're 59 and a half, you can take, let's say you've got a couple hundred thousand bucks in there, and you can take that money, move it somewhere else, called a direct rollover, into any number of investments that are out there because you have access to all of them if you take it out of the retirement plan. Then you continue to put your money in the retirement plan. And then a year or two from now, you've accumulated some more money. You can transfer that out. So you're not held hostage all the way until you retire. Some people, you know, you may be 59 and a half. And, you know, I've got a client of mine right now that's still working and he's over 70. And so that's an opportunity for you to be able to move that money and do that. It's called an in-service distribution where you can transfer your money out of your retirement plan. When we come back in just a minute, what we're going to do is talk about reverse mortgages because I have people all the time say, oh, man, I would never consider something like that. So we're going to talk about that kind of thing because reverse mortgages come into play. I think in many cases they make good sense. And so we'll be talking a little bit about how that works. Also, you know, should you downsize your house? How would I go about downsizing? You know, and what would be the smart move when it comes to those kind of things? And so, you know, we got all kinds of cool things that we can do. We'll also talk a little bit about how do I take my pension? Do I take a life pension? Do I take a joint life pension? You know, what is it that we're going to do? The phone number here, if you have questions regarding any of these kind of things, regarding money and business, 615-737-9522, 615-737-9522. And you can also email your questions, roy@roymatlockjr.com, and we will be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, as we move into the second half of the hour, we're going to talk a little bit about the home purchase experience and see what we can come up with to make the right moves when it comes to your home purchase. And right now I have Angela Peach, who is a realtor here in town, on the line. And Angela, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, Roy.
Hey there. So today, you know, last week we talked about, you know, if someone was wanting to sell a house, what they should do in order to get the best, you know, dollar value for the house. But today we're going to talk about buying a house and what goes into, you know, being able to have a realtor work with you. So can you explain to me a little bit? We're going to talk about the buyer's agent. And what does that mean?
Well, it's when you buy a home, that's one of the biggest purchases that you're ever going to make. And it is vitally important that you have someone representing you. And that would be, if you're buying, that would be a buyer's agent. And, you know, there's numerous reasons why that we can get into. But first off, it'll save you money. And it's free.
So let me ask you this. All right, so when someone lists their house, let the listeners know who does the agent represent at that time?
Okay, so the listing agent is representing the seller, and only the seller, and they're going to be looking out for the seller's best interest.
So what that means is that, you know, they hire, say, you to list the house, and then if someone, say, decides they're going to go out and buy a home today, and they just go running out to one of these open houses and they decide to do that, at that point, if they don't have an agent representing them, they're negotiating against the seller and the realtor, even though the realtor is helping them put the deal together. In fact, they're not being represented. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct. Unless they have a buyer's agreement and have a buyer's agent, they're not being represented in the transaction in a professional manner, at least. I mean, they're representing themselves.
Okay, so now when you say representing themselves, what does that mean? They're doing all the negotiation, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so if someone is new in town or they're wanting to, maybe they've going to buy their first house or something like that, by connecting with, say, yourself and having representation, does it cost them any money to do that?
No, at 99.9% of the time, the you know, having a buyer's agent is free because the sellers are paying the commission, both okay, the listing agent and the buyer's agent.
Okay, so what happens is when you're out looking for a house, there's a commission paid out. They usually it gets split between the representing whoever's representing you as a buyer and whoever's representing the seller, and they split that. So it's being paid either way. The only difference is if you go at it yourself, you don't get any representation. And what are some of the things that could happen if you go and you do it on your own rather than having someone help you?
Well, first off, if you're going on your own, you really don't necessarily know what the right offer is. So a real estate agent, buyer's agent will know the market hopefully really well and be able to help you, you know, formulate a great offer in line with the market. And there's so many things that they're going to help you with, like, you know, obviously the offer, but when it comes time to inspections, they're going to help you negotiate and navigate that process, which is a really important process. They're going to help you stay on schedule with all of your deadlines that you have to meet. They're going to coordinate showings, which if you've ever tried to go on your own and trying to call the listing agent and trying to get them to meet you over there, you know, that's really difficult. So they can help line up, you know, a lot of different showings in one day. You know, they're going to have service providers that you may need in the process, like inspectors and attorneys and, like, structural, if you need, like, a structural inspector.
So what you're talking about is they get, if you hire a realtor to represent you as a buyer's agent, you're getting all this, and it's not costing anything. And, you know, I say that because a lot of people go out that's what they'll do this weekend. They'll go out to an open house, and they'll be by themselves, unrepresented, and maybe even try to put an offer on. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense to do it that way. And so this weekend you're going to be actually having some open houses. And so where are you going to be, and how can they reach you?
So I'm going to be today from 2 to 4 and tomorrow from 2 to 4 at 4701 Michigan, and my assistant's going to be at 905 47th, which is 2 doors down, 47th Avenue North, and they can come see me there, or they can reach me on my cell phone, 615-403-4076, or my office, 615-432-2919.
Okay, this is Angela
or
Peach.
Or look me up on Facebook. On my professional page, Angela Peach Benchmark Realty, and would love to connect with you.
Yeah, very good. Okay, that's a little information, guys. Angela Peach, and you can reach her Facebook page, Angela Peach Benchmark Realty, and go see her this weekend at the open houses. All right, so we're going to go down that path. We talked about, you know, so now you're buying a house. And, you know, for a lot of people that are at or near retirement, one of the things they do is they downsize. And they downsize their house. They want to get a house that's, you know, maybe one level or rather than going up and down the steps. And, you know, I went this week over the Dominican Republic, and I had my phone in my pocket with my health app, and it was 25 miles of walking this week. It's crazy. I mean, you're at this big hotel. And so, you know, you want to get something maybe that's on a flat, you know, a little, you know, you get different houses. So let's just say that you're in a situation, maybe you don't have quite enough money and you're at least 63 years old and maybe your home is paid for. You've got a house, but you don't have enough money. You've got a $500,000 house that might be paid for. What is a reverse mortgage and what could it do? Well, I've seen people where they go in, they downsize. First thing they do is they take that $500,000 house and they sell it. And when they sell it, they get $500,000. So now that they get their $500,000, they go buy a $300,000 house. So now you would think, well, if they paid cash, one way they could do that is they could pay cash $300,000, that would leave them $200,000. That $200,000, then they could have that invested and they can turn around and do something with it. That's an idea, all right? But one other option is they could go in and do what's called a reverse mortgage. And what they would do is they would do the reverse mortgage, and rather than paying $300,000 for the house, they would put $150,000 down, and that would be about the amount of money it would take in order to do a reverse mortgage to where you would never have another payment again. So now what happens is you've got your house, you have no payment other than taxes and insurance, you have no payment, and then what you have is $350,000 left over. That money could be used to draw income off of. You could put it into some type of investment and do that. So how does the reverse mortgage work? Well, the reverse mortgage is, for the sake of it, a flexible payment mortgage. What that means is if you want to pay the payment, pay the payment. If you don't want to pay the payment, you don't have to pay the payment. And what happens, the interest will accumulate. And when we come back, I'll talk about numbers, how that might would work. So 615-737-9522. My name's Roy Matlack Jr., and we'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlack Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back, and Roy Matlock Jr., and we're talking money, and right now we're talking about reverse mortgages. I have people ask me all the time, you know, they just don't understand them. They ask me questions about reverse mortgages, so I thought I would give you kind of an overview of how a reverse mortgage works and whether or not it might make sense to people. You know, everybody, when they pay, their goal is throughout their life, I think at one point in time, they'd love to have their home paid for. Now, whether having a home that's paid for is a great investment, you know, that's pretty questionable, but it does give you a place that you're living and you don't have a payment. And so from a cash flow standpoint, it's good. I've always recommended that, you know, if you're going to buy a house, especially when rates are low, that you don't have a goal necessarily to pay it off. You have a goal of living as cheaply as you can in that home. Now, in many cases, you get a better interest rate if you do a 15-year mortgage. I did that on one of my houses where I did the 15-year mortgage because I got a better interest rate, not because I was wanting to necessarily pay it off quicker. But then you get to retirement, and in many cases, I see people, they have their house paid for, and they don't have enough money. And that's where a reverse mortgage comes in. So the way a reverse mortgage works is it allows you to pull the equity out of your house, and you can use that equity in order to use it for retirement and investments and things like that. So let's just say that you have a home that's paid for. It's a $400,000 house. It's paid for. You don't have enough money, and so then you turn around and you put you take a reverse mortgage out. You're 63, and you take that out. And at 63, you'll get about $200,000 of equity out of your house. So now you have a $200,000 mortgage. You don't give up your house. You own the house. It's a mortgage. The only difference in a reverse mortgage and a regular mortgage is a regular mortgage you pay back consistently. You have a set schedule that you're required to pay each month, paying principal and interest. On a reverse mortgage, you can do a number of things. You can just not pay at all. And if you don't pay, what's going to happen is every month the interest that should have been paid, if the home is a $200,000, if you got a $200,000 reverse mortgage and it's 5% interest, well, that 5% interest is going to accumulate each month until you, at the end of the year, you'd have like $10,000 in interest. And so what happens is each year that you don't pay, the loan gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And people say, oh, no, I don't want to do that. But the other side of it is that your home is still appreciating just like it normally would. In 20 years from now, if we have typical real estate appreciation, your $400,000 house is worth twice that, $800,000. And then your mortgage has been increased, and you still end up leaving yourself with equity. But the other side is you're able to take that $200,000 out, and you're able to put it over into an investment, and maybe you're getting, you know, $700-$800 a month on it compared to paying it into your home. I had an instance where I had a family where they had credit card debt, car payments, and stuff like that, total about $1,300 a month. They had a house that was paid for, and they didn't have the cash flow, it didn't seem like, really, to be able to get out of debt doing that. And so I recommended to them that they do a reverse mortgage. And by doing the reverse mortgage, they were able to eliminate $1,300 of debt payments. And then at that point, they were also able to get some additional cash they were able to set aside. And by doing that, that allowed them to get additional income. All told, it was about $2,000 a month difference. You know, and then I have children that are out there. They say, oh boy, if they do this reverse mortgage, we're not going to have anything, you know, to leave behind. And I always tell people this, that if, you know, your equity is in your home or your equity is outside of your home, so you may have it outside, and then there'll be investments there, and there'll still be equity on the other side. So in many cases, I believe a reverse mortgage is a good thing. And so if you're out there right now and you're retired and your cash flow is limited, you might want to consider putting doing a reverse mortgage. You got to be 63 in order to do it. But in many cases, it makes good sense. So let's go to a caller real quick. Let's talk to Adam. And Adam's got a question regarding 401ks. What's your question, Adam?
Hey, Roy, I have recently changed jobs. I've got an old 401k sitting in the previous company, and I was wondering, my current company has a 401k that's offered, and I was planning on rolling my previous one into it. I was going to see if there's any pitfalls I need to avoid there and if that's the right move.
Okay, so when you have a 401k from a prior company, you've got a number of options. One of the options is you can just leave it where it's at. The other option is you can move it into, like what you're talking about doing, put it into your current new 401k. And then you have a third option, which is the option I always tell people to take, and that's to roll it into an individual retirement account. Now, what that allows you to do by moving it to an IRA, you control that money. To give an example, when you have a 401k or any kind of retirement plan through your work, it's a company retirement plan that it stays at that company until you leave or you turn age 59 and a half. So I see many times, saw one just recently that the expense ratios on the underlying funds were 1.5%, which is way high. So that 401k was costing an additional 1%, 0.75, whatever, to that person. So if they had the ability to ever get out of that, they would be wiser to do that. So what I would do is I would first look at, you know, where is it at now? Is it okay? That's one option. And the way you look at that, you have somebody compare expenses and returns and stuff like that. The second thing would be, look, you can look at what you have through your new job. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't put it there because outside of your 401k, you'll have other options. And the ideal option usually is to move it into from the 401k into an IRA. The IRA, you move it direct transfer, and so then when you move that, there's no taxes or penalties or anything like that. So that's what I would do. I would consider just putting it into something on my own. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
So very good. So what happens, guys? You're out there. You change jobs, I think, about 8 or 10 times. I mean, it's crazy. I read a article that said if you ask for a raise right now, you have an 83% chance of getting that raise if you ask for it, because the job market's so tough or tight right now for employers. And if you change jobs, you'll get a bigger raise if you go somewhere else, because everybody's looking for people and they'll pay you more, than if you stay where you're at. So if you're changing jobs, now you've got a retirement plan. So what are you going to do? Are you going to leave it where you're at? And I wouldn't do that. You have no control over it. Or you can roll it over to your own IRA. And so if you want to do something like that, you have all the options out there to be able to do that. So let's see. We got Rhonda on the line. Let's take a call from Rhonda. Rhonda, are you there? Hello, Rhonda.
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Hey, is it Rhonda or
It's Veranda.
Veranda. Veranda. Oh, okay. Go ahead. What's your question?
I was trying to see what is the magic number I need to retire. I was trying to figure out what goal, what target.
Well, let me ask you this: what if right now you could have do nothing money coming in, and that would make you happy? How much money per year would that be?
Nothing money.
And then you just say you don't have to do nothing for it. You just want, you'd say I'm cool. Oh. Give me this amount of money. Okay. I don't have to do nothing for it. I just want to live off this amount of money. How much income would you need?
I would like at least $100,000.
Okay, so $100,000 a year. Okay, so if you want $100,000 a year, the rule of thumb is between 16 and 20 times that amount of money. All right. Now, if you take that $100,000 and that's if you want pure investments, now you're probably going to get some Social Security off of it. And if you look, you can look that up and find out. But, you know, if you're getting a couple grand on Social Security, then that would leave you with about $70,000, something like that. Okay. So it's $70,000. Multiply that times about 20. So let me give you an idea on that. If 70 times 20 is 1.4 million, and if you pull 5% on 1.4 million, that will give you $70,000. And then what happens is, if you have a decent investment that grows a little above that 5%, each year you'll be able to get a little bit more in order to keep you up with inflation. Because, you know, the average joint life expectancy today is almost 90 for a husband and wife. And so if you retire at 65, whatever you start pulling at 65, you're going to need twice that much toward the end of your life. And so you want to make sure. And so I tell people 20 times is the rule of thumb. And so then what you do, you just look and you put a plan together. What's the plan? Well, here's my goal in today's dollars. Let's inflate it a little bit, you know, out however many years away. Let's take what I already have and start saving. Now, do you have access to retirement plans through work, or what do you? What kind of things are you doing?
Yes, I have. I'm with Voya at my job.
Okay. Okay.
It's, I think it's like 401k. It's a
Metro government. 457, maybe. Does that sound right?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's called a deferred comp. You've got a deferred comp, or more than likely is what they have, possibly a 403B, but I think it's a deferred comp. What you want to do is make sure that – how old are you now?
48.
So you still want to have, you know, your accounts in mostly growth at that age. You know, so growth type investments. And one of the things I tell people, if you have an option to choose what's called a target series, if you're not real familiar with which way to pick on the different fund choices, if you pick the target series, what they do is it's an age date type thing. So you would have at age 48 today. You know, if you did 17 years from now, we'd be looking at like a 2035 or a 2040 plan. And what that would do is they would automatically manage that money in order to make sure that you have it aggressive enough now. But as you get closer to retirement, it would be less aggressive. So does that help?
Yes, thank you so
much. All right, thanks for calling. And we're getting ready to run out of time. We've got one more caller I'm going to go ahead and throw in here. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, Roy, I'm here.
What can I do for you?
Hey, well, you know, I'm kind of looking to get my income up a little bit, and I was just kind of seeing if you thought there could be any side hustles that you recommend to kind of help get our finances all together.
I'm sorry, you said what? Repeat that.
I'm just trying to get our income up, my wife and I, and just kind of see if there's any side hustles that you would recommend.
You know, I'll tell you what, man, I started out in the investment business part-time. I did it for 18 months. I got my insurance and securities license over 35 years ago. So, you know, that was my side hustle that turned into something, you know, and I've been doing the same thing ever since. And so, and we actually, if you go to my website at roymatlockjr.com, we've got information on that, and we bring people in part-time to do things. But, you know, there's so many things, but one of the key elements I would say to anything you do on the side, do something that could have a back end to it, whatever it may be, to where, you know, maybe it's something you enjoy doing that you can turn into, you know, something that long term could be a new career or whatever it may be. So, Joe, I appreciate you calling. I know we're out of time here. Okay, guys, I will see you next week. Roy Matlock Jr., and we will be answering your money questions. If you need information on anything, go to roymatlockjr.com, and we will see you next weekend. Thank you.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.